Hello there. My name is Stephen Rumford and I am the host of the Life and Death podcast, brought to you by Ashgate Hospice. This is a series in which we have honest conversations about life, death, bereavement and so much more. I've worked in palliative care for more than 20 years and in this series I sit down with a host of different people to discuss their experiences of death, dying and bereavement in order to get to a deeper understanding of what life and death means for them. After the success of the first and second series, as well as a Christmas special last year, we're delighted to be back with our third series. In this episode, I'm joined by Kimberly Greaves, a mother of two whose husband Andrew died just over a year ago, aged 44, after being diagnosed with bladder cancer 3.5 years before. Now 45 herself, Kimberly has spent the last 12 months coming to terms with life as a young widow. Join us as we find out what life has been like following the death of Andrew, how she's coped, and what the future might look like for her and her two young children. So, Kimberly, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you.
If you wouldn't mind, I wonder if we could just start off by telling us a little bit about Andrew's story. In particular, bring him into the room. What was Andrew like? Tell us a bit about Andrew.
So Andrew was everybody's friend, the sort of person that didn't make enemies. He was a lovely, smiley man. He was a family man, and we'd been together for a very long time, since we were teenagers. I met him when I was 17 and he was 18. So, you know, we spent our whole adult life together. And just from the very beginning, from being so young, we were, you know, so committed to each other. And it was just a great man and a really sociable man. The sort of person who, when we'd go on holidays, for instance, he would pull up a chair, go and sit with another family, chat to them. Often I'd lose him at the bar because he'd be talking to somebody as I'm sat at a table waiting for him to bring my drink back. And it was just, he just had this awe of just, you know, niceness, the sort of person you'd want to get to know, sort of person you'd want, you know, by your side. And I can safely say that, you know, I was the love of his life and he was the love of my life because we'd spent so many years together.
And it's random, isn't it? I mean, we don't all get that in life, do we? Do you know what I mean? We don't.
Yeah. I think as well, when you see the photos of Andrew and people that I've met since, they can see what a nice man he was. Just through a photo, just through that smile, you can just kind of see the sort of person. And I like that. And I like to hear that when people tell me. Mm. Because, you know, we can often talk about somebody who's no longer here and we can say, oh, they were lovely, you know, and we always say that. But he, you know, he really was a nice man.
One of the angels.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could say a little bit about that time when Andrew was diagnosed, so when it entered your, you know, when that reality entered your lives. And I wonder if you can just maybe just talk through some of that. I suppose one of the things I'm interested in is when we get the information, there is, I presume, a shock. There is that, you know, the shock of the diagnosis. But what's often not talked about, I think, is the process that people go through as they accommodate that reality, or at least try to accommodate that reality. So I wonder if you could just talk us through your experience, how you and any kind of reflections on, you think, how Andrew himself felt and coped with some of those things.
Yeah, I think from the diagnosis that he got back in, the diagnosis was October 2017. He'd already been to the doctors beforehand back in September because he was experiencing blood in the urine. And bladder cancer is one of those cancers that is not as well known about. And so we didn't see blood in urine and think it's bladder cancer. We saw that as, okay, that there's a health condition here. He needs to get it seen and to get that referral to urology. And so the word cancer was not there. And Andrew went for an appointment and I was at work and I got a text message. And it just said, and he used to call me babe, and it just said, babe, I need you. And I just knew, it's, you know, I didn't want to ask any questions at that point because I had an hour's drive to get to him. And so it was, you know, I'll meet you at the hospital at the lay-by outside, Chesterfield Royal, and I'll be there in an hour. So he told me that they'd found tumours in his bladder, and I remember just feeling absolutely gutted that I wasn't there with him. By October 2020, he was told that the cancer had spread to his liver. So it had gone from his bladder, his lungs, his liver, and it basically from that point it had started to spread onwards. And still, you know, we continued to fight. No matter what we were told, we just had to fight. Again, even as bad as, you know, the diagnosis was at that point, I never expected him to die.
And just out of curiosity, Kimberly, what were the medics saying at this time, you know, his oncologist? Was there a, had there been a kind of discussion from them, at least? I understand what you're saying about that that desire to sort of, you know, resist, as it were, and the need, in fact, to resist. But what were you being told? Can you remember what the sort of, did they talk about death to you, or was that just not mentioned at all from the oncologist?
And if they did, I'd say that Andrew and I refused to hear it. Okay. Andrew was 44 years old, and as I was told, he had a strong heart. So he was able to keep going and keep fighting. And so, again, even as close as we got to, you know, the date that he passed away, which is the 26th of March, 21, we were still fighting. We still continued with hope. And actually, if I'd known that he was going to die, I don't think that we could have put up the fight that we did. And, you know, Andrew especially, obviously. I think he knew, but he saw me fighting and, you know, very much did it for me and for the kids.
With that attitude of fighting, was there any point for you when you thought about him dying? Do you know, I'm sort of wondering how you managed to sustain that in the light of seeing the changes, you know, watching the sort of body change and all. Was it solid for you as a kind of position that this is winnable all the way till the end?
When I look back, there were things that I did. I must have always had it in my head that he could die, because we started to put our affairs in order. We had a will put together just a couple of months before he passed away. And there were things that we talked about, which were very practical things, but without saying, it was more a just in case, you know, this is quite a scary time, so let's just make sure that, you know, everything's in order. And but you're going to be fine. It was like that. But I think he did very much sort of pacify me, and I think he definitely knew, but maybe I did, and I was just refusing to listen or accept that at the time.
So because Mike, it certainly isn't easy. Were you there as Andrew died? Did you manage to be there? So you were with him and the family, or you were just there? What was that whole?
So we were told a few days before that he wasn't going to make it until the end of the week. And so we made a point of, you know, the children coming in. We didn't want them to be there at the end. You know, at the time, they were, our daughter's 13 and our son's 7. And I brought the children in, and he was lovely. He was smiley, making a real effort to smile. But it was a little bit awkward in that he didn't want to be having any final conversations with the children, and that he didn't want to say, this is happening. He just wanted to be dad. He just wanted, you know, them to come in and see dad, who's, you know, been spending a bit of time in the hospital and the hospice, and just remember him in a certain way. So, you know, he must have been smiling through the pain at that point. But again, like Andrew, I'm glad it was like that. I'm glad that they didn't see him in, you know, as he was at the end. He just wanted me to be there. And we didn't have big, massive conversations. We just would sit quietly together, because there was nothing we needed to say to each other. We'd been together for such a long time that we knew each other. We knew what each other would be thinking. and the words didn't have to come out. But we also took the time to plan the funeral, discuss songs, and just thinking back to those conversations, I don't know how we did it, but we did. We just had to. And, you know, the fact was we had been given days, and in those days we were able to talk about those things. We didn't have to talk about our lives together or how much we loved each other. We knew that, you know, went without saying.
Well, it's a way of making it real, isn't it, as well, in a way, without just talking about it as the thing, you know. I agree. So I wonder if we can move just on a little bit to, I mean, I'm interested in that time after. Mm-hmm. And in a way, I'm talking about grief, I suppose, this very particular emotion that we have when we lose. I mean, sometimes people say, you know, when we lose things, but my personal experience is it's when you lose someone who is so central to your life. That's what grief really is. You know, you feel sad when you lose a job or you lose something that you hold precious. But I think when it's someone that is deeply connected to you, I think that is what grief is. And I just wonder if you would say a little bit about, because, you know, obviously what you were saying before is it was very much about, I know the last days there was a very pragmatic approach to what was physically going to happen and then what you would need to do after that and what, you know, but up until then it had been very much about fighting. And I just wonder if you would be willing to say a little about your experience of your grief and then something maybe about what that was like having as a mum. Do you know what I mean? In the other roles that you were still existing in, that didn't stop, that didn't end in any way, of course. So maybe a little bit about that grief, but also how you as a mum managed it with the kids' emotional states, if you feel.
So in those final 3 months where Andrew was fighting, I was a wife, I wasn't a mum at that point. The children were being taken care of by family. I obviously spent some time sleeping at the hospice. I also spent some time sleeping at the hospital as well. And so I wasn't around a great deal for the children. And I'd say that I just very much went into autopilot. The grief, I'd say, started before Andrew died. In knowing that he was going to die, I remember being on the phone to like my mum, to my brother's wife, Michelle, and just saying, you know, is it going to be okay? Just distraught, saying, is it going to be okay? Well, he's going to die, is it going to be okay? And as soon as we lost him on the Friday night, I went home that evening and the children were brought over on the Saturday morning. I pretty much spent the whole day in bed on that Saturday, but I was there and I was home. And by the Sunday, we had the funeral directors over at the house. And I think that just got me into the motion of, right, I need to do this, I need to do that. It's funeral plans, it's everything we talked about, from choosing the songs. And Monday morning, I had plenty of offers for friends, family to take the children to school. And I said, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get up on Monday morning and I'm going to take the children to school, because what the children need right now is normality. They've had an awful 3 months as well, and their dad's just died, and they don't need somebody else to be taking care of them. The only person they need now is their mum. And ever since then, I've continue to be on this autopilot and continue to do the very normal things of school runs, of the kids' activities. I've got 2 very busy children. I have to get up every morning for those children, and they need to see, you know, life is going on for us. Yes, he's not here and he was our every single day, but I'm here, and for Andrew and for the children, I'm just going to do my best and be present. I don't know how I've got through it.
Okay. Because I was struck a bit by the thing you said about, you know, I've been on autopilot since then. I suppose a bit of me is wondering where that grief is in you. Do you know what I mean? Like where that...
Yeah.
Because it's my sense of my own grief, if I speak for this was the loss of my mother rather than my wife, it may not be the same thing, but it felt like a big lump in me, like a thing, like this thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like it wasn't quite a beast, but it was a thing that I sort of had. And I don't think it got any smaller. I think I've just grown around it. I don't know whether that makes any sense.
And I've heard that term, yeah.
You still feel the same, and it's something about loss. And I'm not challenging you at all by this, but you know, like it's a big deal, isn't it? It's a big deal.
It's by no means, it's not been okay.
Right.
And the worst point that I struggled was throughout those first 6 months, I struggled with those the most because I was very much led by other people. I was, you know, if I had offers of, you know, me and the kids going on holiday with various different people, and I just took them all up. I was just like, yeah, because this is great for the kids. This is what the kids need. And yet inside, I felt like, you know, my whole world had just been ripped apart. He wasn't there. But I do remember it getting to the September, and it was Jaden's birthday, and Jaden turned 8. I just felt completely and utterly overwhelmed, and everything just seemed to come at once, just got on top of me. And it was at that point that I took myself to the GP, and I went in, and it's very hard because I wasn't sure if it was just the grief or whether there was something that they could do for me. And they prescribed antidepressants. And a few weeks after starting the antidepressants, I could see that my mood had started to level. I wasn't having these... It's hard to explain how I was, but I was forever, like you say, with the lump, like the lump was always there. And I felt like for the first time in a long time, I could actually deal with things on more of a level basis and continue on with my life. Because, you know, ultimately, at this point, yes, I'm widowed, I've lost Andrew, but it's the children that have kept me going, and it's the children who need me. So that visit to the GP and starting on those antidepressants meant that I could be a better mum to them.
I mean, one of the things we wanted to sort of look at in this podcast was something about age. Because when we think about someone dying from cancer in hospice care, I think people will think, well, that's for older people. And by that, you know, I mean, you know, put whatever age you want, you know, it's getting longer and longer, isn't it, thankfully. But, you know, we expect that for our grandparents or our great-grandparents. And we don't so much expect it for our dads when we're little children, or our husbands when we're in very much the prime of life. So this notion of, I've been a young, I'm not even sure whether the word widow is something that whether you constitute yourself in that way or think about yourself in that way. But how do you describe what's gone on if you were at a drinks party or something at work and someone doesn't know you and then they ask you?
I know. And this is a difficulty because for me, it's always there. And actually, I want to be able to tell people that, you know, I am a widow. I'm happy to use that term because it is the biggest part of my life. It's, you know, last summer, Jaden joined a new football team. And again, it's one of those things that I look back at and I think, why did I do this during that time? It's obviously been very, very positive for him. But I turned up not knowing any of the parents or any of the children there. But it was all about Jaden, and Jaden needed to be playing more football. So I would just casually just chat to the parents, but not really let on. Nobody asked where his dad was. You know, it's as far as everyone was concerned, you know, it was either dad was at work or we were split up or whatever. It's not unusual to have one parent turn up. But it was later on, and again, it comes around to the time of Jaden's birthday, and they were training on the day of his birthday. And actually, they put together a little bit of an end-of-season celebration. And so I posted within the group chat and just said, oh, this is great, because this is Jaden's birthday, and he would love to come along and have fun with you all. And I took the opportunity just to write it in that text to say, it's also going to be 6 months since his dad passed away. It's going to be a very emotional time. So I'm glad he's got something to look forward to. And I just have to drop it in like that when I can. It's just, for me, I have to let people know, but I don't want anybody to feel awkward, because it can be the most awkward thing to bring up in any conversation. I feel better when people know. Otherwise, it's always there and it's always in my head that I just, you know. But there's a great community out there for young widows that people won't necessarily know about. The night Andrew died, I was taken into a room and I was chatting to one of the nurses, and she gave me all this information. I had this pack that I was to walk away with. And inside this pack, there's some information about a charity called WAY, and WAY stands for Widowed and Young. And it transpires that WAY is for people who've lost a partner or a spouse under the age of 51. And just that discovery of so many other people like me, or even younger and with children, it just gave me a bit of a sense of belonging. It's nice to know other people in the same position, and it's not a nice position to be in, but to know that there are others is a huge help.
And you know that they understand what you feel, don't they? Absolutely. I guess, I mean, but I imagine that, you know, again, not comparing, but when my mum, if I found someone else had lost their mum, I'd be like, oh, what happened? Like, I was completely open, and they would be. I remember having, you know, in tears with the woman who, you know, registered my mum's death, because she'd lost her mum 2 years ago. And we were there for an hour crying at each other, telling each other our life stories. I didn't know this woman from Eve.
Yeah.
And yet that moment of sort of openness that comes with it is, well, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, it does mean there's pain, but there was a certain sort of openness that I'd never felt before. You know, we hope that things like this podcast are listened to by people who may be on a similar journey. And I was going to ask what advice you would have, if any, by way of sort of finishing, what advice you would have for someone who maybe they're just starting the process you've just been through for the last year.
I remember a year ago where I just felt, I don't know what's ahead of me. I don't know how I'm going to get through this next 6 months or this year. It was just felt completely impossible. I still feel we are a year on. It still feels very, very early. I'm still very much on a journey. And part of that journey is discovering things about myself, because, you know, it was always me and Andrew, and then now it's just me. And people say time is a healer, and it absolutely is. When I reflect on the last 12 months, I feel that I'm glad to be here now than where I was 12 months ago. And I can say the same for Andrew. Andrew, I couldn't see him in the pain and the suffering that he had to go through. I'm glad he's not having to go through that. There's a version of Andrew that I would love to have here today for me and for the children and for our families, but it just wasn't meant to be. And I'm accepting of that. And I'm glad I have that acceptance, because that acceptance allows me to continue this life. It gets easier. It will always be there. You've just got to ride through it, and it, you know, it will be full of ups and downs and all kinds of emotions that have, you know, you'd hope to never ever have to experience again. And losing Andrew was my first experience of grief. You know, losing my husband was the first grief. I've got my parents, my brothers. My first big grief was my husband, and I never thought that I would get through it, but I'm getting through it. But I feel lucky in a sense that I've got amazing people around me, and I've got our children, and I plan to be around for a very long time for those children, because those children are never going to experience that kind of loss again, not until we're all very old.
Yeah, till we've earned it.
Yeah.
Listen, you honestly, you come across so strong and clear in your focus, in what your purpose is, you know, and it does feel like, you know, the love that was you and Andrew is what still seems to kind of shine on and come through in everything you say.
Yeah, for me, it's being able to talk. I cannot stop talking about Andrew. I want to talk about him every day, and I want to talk about him to everybody who's willing to listen. And I want to be able to share the story of the journey that Andrew went on. To me, it's that journey and his death that I'm still processing right now. And I hope that I can get to the point where I can actually look at the 26 years that we were together and actually start to think about those moments in time, and it not just to be all about, you know, the more recent events. So ultimately, that's my goal, is to be able to reflect on the lovely memories that we had, you know, in all our time together.
Thank you so much for joining us, Kimberly, and thank you for tuning in to the Life and Death podcast. You can rate us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love you to ask us any questions or share your experience of death and dying in your review, or let us know on social media by searching for us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. If you've been affected by anything you've heard in this episode, you can head to our website, ashgatehospice.org.uk, where there are lots of resources to support people who are experiencing grief and bereavement. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.